The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Doris Hyde from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Writer's Retreat meeting on August 11th. The NFB versus Greyhound settlement brought in the lawsuit U.S. versus Greyhound. The Foundation Fighting Blindness supports an act in Congress, House Resolution Bill H.R. 6421, called iBonds, and the screen reader's discount available for SSDI and SSDI recipients. Iowa Department of the Blind has several job openings for visually impaired people, and there is a job opening through the Randolph Shepherd Act at Rehabilitation Services. Changes to SNAP are being proposed in Congress, and there's a museum users study that is enrolling people who have encountered a museum once or twice in their lives. Today's reading of Vision News is underwritten by an anonymous gift in loving memory of Joe and Kelly. The online writers group invites you to join us for our second meeting. Date Saturday, August 11th. Time 5 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Mountain, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. Enter the Book Nook Room at http://conference321.com/masteradmin/room.asp query ID=RS7867A2369E0E. In our August meeting, we will be discussing techniques for promoting our work. We have several members experienced in self-publishing and marketing who have valuable contributions to share. We are looking for folks to join the meeting with questions and to join our mailing list with topics they'd like to see discussed. Our internet discussion group is Writers Retreat on groups.io. There you can also post any writing you wish to group to discuss. To learn more about our hosting voice chat community, go to http://www.accessibleworld.org. Writers Retreat mailing list instructions. To subscribe to the group, send email to Writers Retreat Plus, subscribe at groups.io. To post to the group, send email to writersretreat@groups.io. The link to the group is https://groups.io/g/writersretreat/topics. Signed, Bob Acosta. Press release dated July 17, 2018 from Chris Danielson, Director of Public Relations at and National Federation of the Blind, 410-659-9314, extension 2330. Also, cell phone 410-262-1281. Email cdanielson with an E-N at nfb.org. National Federation of the Blind reaches comprehensive agreement with Greyhound. San Francisco, July 17, 2018. Greyhound has committed to make its website and mobile apps more accessible to blind passengers who use screen reader software to access these services. An agreement with the National Federation of the Blind, NFB, resolves a lawsuit filed by the NFB and five blind California residents who had trouble using the website. Under the agreement, Greyhound will ensure that Greyhound.com and the mobile apps allow blind users to gain the same information and engage in the same transactions with an ease of use substantially equivalent to that of a sighted person using the same browser or operating system without screen reader software. Changes needed to accomplish this goal will be made in less than a year. Until then, Greyhound will inform blind passengers of alternative methods for purchasing bus tickets on the website and mobile apps. The website and mobile apps will also clearly state Greyhound's long-standing policy that blind passengers who self-identify to customer service representatives and state that they have had difficulty using the website or mobile apps will not be charged any call center booking fee or other additional charge solely because they have used the call center under these circumstances. The National Federation of the Blind will conduct a secret shopper program to report to Greyhound whether the operators at its call centers are following this policy. We commend Greyhound for agreeing to remove access barriers on its website and mobile apps on a robust timeline, said Mark Rigabono, president of the National Federation of the Blind. We further commend the company for its commitment to treat blind passengers fairly when we are unable to complete transactions through its website or apps, and urge other transportation providers to follow Greyhound's example in both respects. The National Federation of the Blind will work closely with Greyhound to help ensure the booking passage on its bus service is a fully accessible experience for current and future blind passengers. As we complete our work on our new websites and mobile apps, we are grateful to have the assistance of the capable and committed members of the leadership of the National Federation of the Blind in ensuring that these websites and apps are easy to use and fully and equally accessible to all of our customers, said Todd Kutch, vice president of the Strategy and Business Development, Greyhound Lines, Inc. The plaintiffs are represented by Timothy Elder and Anna Levine of TRE Legal Practice, and by Lisa Ells and Michael Nunez of Rosenbein, Galvin, and Grunfeld, about the National Federation of the Blind. The National Federation of the Blind, NFB, headquartered in Baltimore, is the oldest and largest nationwide organization of blind Americans. Founded in 1940, the NFB consists of affiliates, chapters, and divisions in 50 states, Washington, D.C., and Puerto Rico. The NFB defends the rights of blind people of all ages and provides information and support to families with blind children, older Americans who are losing vision, and more. We believe in the hopes and dreams of blind people and work together to transform them into reality. Learn more about our many programs and initiatives at nfb.org. About Greyhound. A Greyhound, a First Group PLC company, is the only national provider of scheduled intercity coach services in the U.S. and Canada. Based in Dallas, Greyhound provides scheduled passenger services to 3,200 destinations, carrying approximately 18 million passengers a year. The company's point-to-point service, Greyhound Express, serves more than 135 markets and also operates brands for local markets, including Boat Bus, Lucky Street Casino Service, and Greyhound Connect. Greyhound is the first U.S.-based intercity bus company to operate domestic service within Mexico, as well as international connections to Texas. For fare and schedule information and to buy tickets, call 1-800-231-2222 or visit the website at http://www.greyhound.com. For the latest news and travel deals, follow us on Twitter. From the website blindness.org, Foundation Fighting Blindness urges Congress to pass eye bonds legislation. From www.blindness.org, bill introduced in U.S. House would speed up cures for blindness. Dateline Columbia, Maryland, July 19, 2018. The Foundation Fighting Blindness strongly supports a bipartisan bill introduced late Wednesday, July 18, 2018, in the U.S. House of Representatives that holds enormous promise for saving and restoring the vision of 4 million adults and almost 500,000 children in the U.S. who are blind or have severely impaired vision from a variety of eye diseases and conditions, including inherited retinal diseases and age-related macular degeneration. The Faster Treatments and Cures for Eye Diseases Act, H.R. 6421, which would allow for the creation of eye bonds, would fund translational research into advanced treatments and cures for blindness and other causes of severe vision impairment. Eye bonds fill a critical need because many promising therapies never make it through the translational research process, out of labs and into clinical trials, because of a lack of funding. Translational research is often referred to as crossing the valley of death for this reason. Pharmaceutical companies and biotechs are less likely to fund translational research. They prefer to fund projects once they have had some initial success in a clinical trial. This is even more the case with rare diseases or conditions without a proven regulatory pathway or demonstrated commercial success. FFB is grateful to the sponsors of the legislation. Republican Representatives Pete Sessions of Texas, Fred Upton of Michigan, and Billy Ruckus of Florida, as well as Democratic Representative Sanford Bishop of Georgia. I-bonds would finance packages of loans that would total $1 billion for new projects over 4 years in the pilot phase. Underwriters would determine how many projects they would fund and at what amount, not to exceed $250 million in any year. I-bonds would advance treatments and cures for diseases and conditions that affect the entire eye, including the severe vision trauma suffered by veterans of wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. On behalf of the entire blind and vision impaired community, we are grateful for the actions by these members of Congress and urge others to join as co-sponsors of this important legislation. There is no doubt that vision-saving and vision-restoring research sitting on shelves needs to be unleashed so patients can benefit. We are confident that I-bonds will work, says Benjamin Yerxa, Ph.D., Chief Executive Officer. We will especially want to thank Karen and Basil Petru, longtime FFB supporters and leaders, for developing the I-bonds concept and the financial details that make the legislation so beneficial and safe for taxpayers. Supporters expect the Congressional Budget Office will score the cost of the legislation at near zero. That's because taxpayers would be the first to be repaid when private investors recoup their investments. The National Eye Institute, part of National Institutes of Health, would investigate and evaluate programs eligible for funding, although NIH would have no risk related to funding these projects. FFB believes these innovative research bonds will prove successful, and the concept could be used to overcome obstacles that also exist in translating cancer, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and other disease research into practical use. The Foundation Fighting Blindness has been an unparalleled leader in supporting research on inherited retinal diseases for over 46 years. It is currently funding 75 research studies at prominent laboratories worldwide and on the spectrum of emerging retinal disease therapies, including gene, cell, and drug-based treatments. About Foundation Fighting Blindness. The Foundation Fighting Blindness was established in 1971. It has since raised more than $725 million for research aimed at preventing, treating, and curing blindness caused by retinal degenerative diseases. In excess of 10 million Americans and millions more worldwide have experienced or are at risk of experiencing vision loss due to retinal degeneration. Through its support of focused and innovative science, the Foundation drives the research that has and will continue to improve the lives of people affected by retinitis pigmentosa, macular degeneration, Usher syndrome, and other inherited retinal diseases. The Foundation has launched a global patient registry, www.myretinatracker.org, to build knowledge of retinal diseases and advance clinical research. Visit www.fightblindness.org for the latest information on retinal disease research. Follow the Foundation on Facebook and Twitter. Contact for this article, Ben Shaberman, B-S-H-A-B-E-R-M-A-N, at fightblindness.org. Call 410-499-9158. Press release. Please share widely with consumer organizations and others within your network. Computers for the Blind, CFTB, has access to additional grant funds to again offer computers for $60 off regular price. Here are the details. Eligible persons include persons on SSI or SSDI due to blindness. Copy of Social Security reward letter required. Grant also includes parents of legally blind children or youth. Required documentation is an email from the TVI or caseworker stating that the child needs a computer, would benefit from it, and purchasing a new computer with the expensive software would create a hardship on the family. No eye reports or income verification needed. These are desktop computers with larger screens and a home edition license of JAWS, Fusion, or ZoomText of the client's choice. Price includes JAWS training bundle. Cost for grant-covered desktops is $70. The only persons eligible for a grant-covered laptop is a college student that is currently taking classes on campus. Proof required. Cost for laptop under the grant is $125. See Access World article for more details. http://www.afb.org/afbpress/pubnew.asp query Doc ID equals AW190703. Customer service number 214-340-6328. Now offering customer service and tech support in English and Spanish. Computers now ship within 2 weeks. Sincerely, David Jepson, Executive Director, Computers for the Blind. Iowa Department for the Blind Opportunities for Independence. Industrial Arts Instructor, Rehabilitation Counselor, and Rehabilitation Technology Specialist positions now open. We are continuing to search for an Industrial Arts Instructor for the Orientation Center. An ideal candidate will have a passion for teaching, a background in woodworking, a positive attitude toward blindness, and a desire to learn and grow. This position closes August 1st. To learn more and apply, visit https://www.government.jobs.com/careers/Iowa/jobs/213781/orientation-center-instructor-query-page=9/page-type=jobs. For more information, contact Al Bickel at alan.bickel@blind.state.ia.us. Our education and training team is looking for a rehabilitation technology specialist. An ideal candidate will have excellent communications skills, be passionate about assistive technology, possess strong problem-solving skills, enjoy learning new things, and be able to work both independently and as part of a team. This position is based out of Des Moines and closes August 6th. To learn more, visit https://www.governmentjobs.etc. The difference being keywords equals Iowa percent 20, department percent 24, percent 20, the percent 20, blind ampersand page type equals job opportunities jobs. To apply, send a resume and cover letter to Helen Stevens at helen.stevens@blind.state.ia.us. IDB is now seeking a vocational rehabilitation counselor who will serve clients in Northwest Iowa. This position is domiciled in Sioux City, but the counselor may choose to live anywhere in the service area. This position will close July 26th, so it's too late for this broadcast. To see the job posting and so forth, go to governmentjobs.com/careers/Iowa/jobs. A proud partner of the American Job Center Network. Phone 515-281-1333. Information at blind.state.ia.us. Iowa Department for the Blind, 524 4th Street, Des Moines, Iowa, 50309-2364. The following OSERS vacancy announcement. Vocational Rehabilitation Program Specialist, GS-101-13, Conflict Resolution. Located in the Rehabilitation Services Administration, Training and Service Programs Division, TSPD. Service Programs Unit, SPU. Division closes on August 3, 2018 and is open to everyone. If you are interested in obtaining a copy of the announcement or wish to apply, you must submit your application online through the USA Jobs website, which can be accessed through the following location: OSERS-2018-0004, Non-Status Candidates, Query DEU. https://www.usajobs.gov/getjob/view details/505-653-800. OSERS-2018-0005, Federal Employees/Status Candidates, Query MPP. At https://www.usajobs.gov/get-jobs/view-details/505-654-600. We ask your assistance in the recruiting process by providing a copy of the announcement to anyone you believe would be interested and would be qualified for the position. Please note the above closing date of the vacancy announcement. Applications will not be accepted after that date. Thank you for your help in our recruiting efforts to bring the best qualified applicants to our staff. Museum Experience Survey. Cheryl Fogelhatch, Ph.D., an independent archaeologist and museum professional, and Don Winicki, a doctor of education, Ph.D., a professor at Boise State University, are conducting survey research to identify experiences of blind and visually impaired individuals at museums. If you choose to complete the survey, it will take you 15 to 20 minutes. More information about the survey and the research is included at https://jfe/form/capital S capital V_23HHYIC_OHJ V. Eligibility. The survey is intended for people who are A, 18 years old or older, B, blind or visually impaired, and C, who have visited one or more museums in the past. Possible benefits. Results of this research will be reported at academic and professional conferences and in journal publications. Findings and conclusions of the research will enable the researchers to provide information and advice that can improve the experience of blind and visually impaired persons in museums. Risks and discomforts. This study involves no foreseeable serious risks. We ask that you try to answer all questions. However, if there are any items that make you uncomfortable or that you would prefer to skip, please leave the answer blank. Protection of privacy and confidentiality. The survey is designed so that your responses are anonymous. However, for this research project, the researchers are requesting demographic information. Due to the makeup of the population of blind and visually impaired persons in certain areas, the combined answers to these questions may make a person identifiable. The researchers will make every effort to protect your confidentiality. However, if you are uncomfortable answering any questions, you should skip them. Choosing to be in the study. You do not have to be in this study. Participation is voluntary. You may choose not to take part, and you may choose to stop taking part at any time without penalty. Contact information. If you have any questions or concerns about this study or if any problems arise, please contact the researchers at the following points. Cheryl Fogelhatch, Ph.D., archaeologist and museum professional, email c.k.fogle@gmail.com. Telephone 443-939-8217. Don Winicki, Ed. D., Ph.D., professor of ethics and morality and professional practice, Boise State University College of Engineering, email dwinicki@boisestate.edu. Telephone 208-426-1899. If you have questions about your rights as a research participant, you may contact the Boise State University Institutional Review Board, IRB, which is concerned with the protection of volunteers and research projects. You may reach the board office between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Mountain Time, Monday through Friday, by calling 208-426-5401 or by writing Institutional Review Board, Office of Research Compliance, Boise State University, 1910 University Drive, Boise, Idaho, 83725-1138. If you would like a copy of this form for your reference, you may print this out. Luann Blake, J.D., Deputy Executive Director, Jernigan Institute, 200 East Wells Street, Baltimore, Maryland, 21230. Call 410-659-9314, extension 2221. Email lblake@nfb.org. Due to the length of the article, I'm redacting much of the post at dayinwashington.com. If you wish to read the full article, you can go to that website /the-farm-bill-snap-and-work-requirements. Over the years, the SNAP program has grown and shrunk several times. When there were more people out of work and or the economy was struggling, more people, including many who were still working, not making enough, would qualify for food stamps. When times are good, fewer people applied to the program. It has changed in format and nomenclature. In 2008, it was renamed the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, and all mention of coupons and stamps was removed as it had now transitioned to electronic benefits transfer, EBT cards, that operate rather like debit cards. Its idea was to increase the food assistance available to impoverished Americans in the wake of the Great Recession of 2007. So, there is a great example of this from the Union of Concerned Scientists. Suppose the economy in any town USA takes a turn for the worse. A factory relocates, or maybe a natural disaster shuts down the town's major industry for an extended period of time. Many households find they have less money to spend, and business at local establishments slows. Because of hardships resulting from the economic downturn, perhaps job loss or reduced hours, some families apply for SNAP benefits. As those families use SNAP dollars to help put food on their tables, the grocery stores they shop at begin to recover. With more revenue, these stores can hire back staff, resume full operation, and pay for operational costs, like lighting and refrigeration. And, of course, purchase more food from farmers and distributors to meet growing demand. And as SNAP spending is propagated through the supply chain, each sector that gets a share of that additional money is able to spend more money in turn. Changes to the SNAP program. Recently, there have been yet another set of changes being made to SNAP by the administration in the latest Farm Bill. The House passed its version of the Farm Bill in HB 2, Agriculture Improvement Act of 2018, 213 to 211 on June 21st. The Democrats were unanimous in their opposition to the bill, and 20 Republicans joined with them in opposing the bill. Just to give you a bit of context, historically, the Farm Bill has always been legislation that had bipartisan support. This is the first Farm Bill ever to pass through the House or Senate with only one-party support. There are a myriad of changes, and the program is slated for a significant cut in funding, $213 billion, approximately 30% over the next 10 years. For context, that's about one-third of the program. So remember that one in eight Americans who use SNAP, three of them are going to go hungry. But what has really caught people's attention is Section 4103, the new work requirements for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Under the new plan, most able-bodied people between 18 and 60 would have to work or attend a state training program for 20 hours a week to receive benefits. If you don't do this, you'll only be eligible for 90 days worth of food stamps every 3 years. So beginning in 2021, people with disabilities will have to prove every month that they meet the new requirement, worked or participated in a work program for at least 20 hours a week, or that they qualified for an exemption. States would be expected to provide an employment and training slot for any adult who can't find work or cannot obtain a slot in a program funded under the Federal Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. Defenses of legislative changes. So first, let me start why this legislation is popular. When I went looking as to how it got those 213 yes votes, the word that came up over and over was self-sufficiency. On April 26, 2018, House Agriculture Committee member Jeff Rodney Arrington argued that SNAP has nothing to do with children, disabled people, or the elderly. Rather, it is about getting able-bodied people to earn their own living. The USDA's own 2018 Farm Bill and legislative principles specifically states that one of their goals, support work as a pathway to self-sufficiency, well-being, and economic mobility for individuals and families receiving supplemental nutrition assistance. There's that word again, self-sufficiency. The push is that to get something, you have to give something. If you want to eat, then you should be willing to work. That sounds logical enough, right? But what about people with disabilities? Well, there is an exception. It states that the requirement does not apply to an individual if they are under 18 or over 50 years of age, medically certified as physically or mentally unfit for employment, a parent or other member of a household with responsibility for a dependent child, a pregnant woman. There was also language in an earlier version of the bill, though I haven't seen it in this version, where states would be able to request waivers of the work requirement in areas with high unemployment. Please go to the website dayinwashington.com for the rest of this change notification. We've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138.